And welcome back to Dads on the Air, coming to you around Australia on the Community Radio Network. In this program, we bring you informing and entertaining conversations with a wide range of interesting people on topics of fatherhood, family and parenting, men's and boys' issues. Hi, I'm Bill Cable, and our guest today is Jonathan Grindon. Jonathan is the author of an e-book called The Lion, The Switch and The Cuckoo, Adultery in a Test Tube. And it really is an extraordinary story. In any other context, this would be bordering on the impossible to believe, but in family law, the amazing is all too common. Jonathan, welcome to the program.
I read the book again today in preparation of this interview, and it is truly incredible, the story. If you write it out on paper, it covers pages of individual bits of a different story, from me getting sucked into a relationship with an enticing woman, through to getting married to her, having the idea of having a child, having marital difficulties, then resulting in the conception of a child and everything that followed after that.
So why do you refer to the cuckoo in the title of your book?
It's interesting because we had a third party involved in the whole triangle. You had myself, my then second wife, Adeline, and a guy called Nigel, who was her ex-boyfriend, who she never really let go of. She still had an infatuation with. And he volunteered his sperm to be used to fertilize my ex-wife instead of mine. Because of her marital difficulties, she pretended to me that she'd use my sperm, but actually switched to his sperm. And for around 6.5 years, he was the cuckoo. Mm-hmm. He was a third party in the relationship, and he actually came and went from her house to share the experience of my son, or my ex-son, Timothy. And he was a daddy in the wardrobe, a backdoor daddy. And then when eventually the contact case was brought, because I moved, she came out and said, "I don't think he's yours. I think he's Nigel's." And he walked in and took over being the father of my former child.
Well, perhaps, Jonathan, you could just take us back to the start. And where did this story begin with? You'd been married for a couple of years, I think, to your wife, and she was, say, getting on a bit, 43, so there was some difficulties in having a natural conception when you first decided you wanted another child.
Compressing a long story into a couple of minutes, or less. When I first met Adeline, she was very enticing and she appeared to enjoy my company, and we had a great time for the first kind of 10 months, 12 months. And increasingly, lots of discrepancies came out, which was that she'd previously been living still with her ex-boyfriend before I moved in. He was her tenant, so she never really extricated herself from that. But still, we had a good relationship, and it was a lot of fun. But increasingly, she became more workaholic, and then, of course, the whole project that she wanted a baby came up. Because she was so workaholic, this went on for probably about 2 years before she then decided to catch up, because her biological clock was running. And she became all consumed with A, her business, and B, the baby project, but certainly not with me. So the marriage, kind of, when we got married, as soon as we got married, she kind of lost interest in the relationship and just tried to milk it. And I foolishly went along with that and was committed to her because of, you know, marriage that didn't work the first time around, even though I'd been married for 20 years. So I kept on wanting to turn this around. It just was not working. And then eventually she was suggesting IVF. And I deposited my sperm in the Barcelona fertility clinic. At that point, she was quite enthused and happy and being nice to me. But by that December of 2004, things had gone pear-shaped. And then she went to Spain behind my back, recruited her ex-boyfriend to go there because he had never a child. He was single, still nearly 50. And they went behind my back and actually switched the sperm. And she came back and pretended she was pregnant. Well, of course, she was pregnant soon afterwards, but it was my child.
In fact, it was not biologically your child, but it was not biologically her child either, seeing she didn't, it wasn't her eggs.
No, exactly, because it was because her eggs weren't good, she actually bought an egg from the clinic. So, actually, Timothy is half Spanish. Of course, that made it harder to you know, realise that he's not my child, because we never knew what the mother looked like. And he also had my mannerisms, because, you know, socialisation, people pick that up. So we had no reason to believe that. Now, the only kind of thing that came up was that an interesting moment was she was in Spain, and that was a time when my sperm that should have been used was replaced by the ex-boyfriend who came instead of me. He showed up at the clinic, and they didn't seem to have asked them who he was, so they assumed that he was me. So they took my sperm discarded that, because they thought they had a fresher sperm from this other guy who'd come along, thinking he was me. Now, there was a phone call. I was actually at home, and I picked up the phone, and it was the IVF clinic, and they said, could we speak to Adeline Dwindle? Not a real name. And I said, well, she's not here, she's in Spain. Oh, who's that? And I said, it's Dr. Grindon. What? They said, but how can that be? So I thought, this is very strange, this. And when she came back, I was on the case, and I said, what the hell's been going on, Adeline? Because, you know, how can I be in Spain and not and being here at the same time? And she burst out into tears, and she was such a good actress. So good. Oh, I was like, you put this pressure on me, I didn't have to choose, and I'm so desperate for a child. So I just had to go. I was like, so stupid. But then I decided I couldn't go, can't go through with it, can't go through with it. And she was so utterly convincing. She was such a good actress that I was convinced. But what I reckon now is that the clinic picked up on this, because they would have said to themselves, this is weird. And they would have said to her, what the hell's going on? So when she came back, she knew that I wouldn't have known until she was absolutely ready to act out this role of being this poor, poor woman who didn't know what to do. So that was why I was convinced, even though I should have had doubts, that how can a mother ever switch a child like that, you know, their identity is their future? How could they do such a thing?
Well, part of the problem seems to be that it all happened in Spain. Was there some reason why you did it in Spain rather than in England?
She did her research, and because she was more expert in that whole area than me. But we shared that. And actually, it was basically, whilst they weren't that great on a professional level, they allegedly had a very high success rate. And with IVF, that's really crucial. Some clinics, there's a league table of which are the better clinics. And that was one of the top ones, and that's why we went there.
We're going to take a short break now. This is a song by The Who called Who Are You?
Who are you?
and that was Who Are You? By The Who. And we're speaking today with Jonathan Grindin, who is the author of a new e-book called The Lion, The Switch and The Cuckoo, Adultery in a Test Tube. And this is an extraordinary story. We're used to the various types of adultery, but I don't know how common this is, but a man's sperm to be switched with another man and to be told for many years that he was the father, it's a strange story.
I would say that research suggests that 2 to 4% of all children are affected by parental deception, and that is reflected by what you come across in the real world. That's quite a high proportion of families affected by this. Well, actually, lobbied government. I've lobbied the Minister of Justice, Gove, who was put to the sword by a new Prime Minister. Thank God for that. There were disinterest in anything to do with changing the law on this. It's just something the government wants to sweep under the carpet.
Yes, it's similar in Australia. I think they just think this would have such an enormous impact on society in general.
So I would say I'm really lucky because at least I actually got my wife convicted of fraud and deceit, twice. But in the McGill and McGill case, what happened there was terrible. That really to suffered all of that. And I have actually met another victim, Ewan Kennedy in the UK, which is in the book, and his story is even worse than mine. I mean, the guy actually was his ex-wife, who had two children by another man through an affair. She actually persuaded him to get a vasectomy so they wouldn't have any of the children. He can't have any children anymore. The stories that have come back to me after writing this book and putting my email on Jonathan Grindin up and stuff, and on the mail of the article, have been horrendous. It's just an odd thing. It's just, and it's so disgusting to feel that a child, never mind the fathers. I mean, quick, I've been damaged, but what about my child?
Yes,
the one that I looked after for 5 3/4 years, and I was acting legally as his father. Meanwhile, the cuckoo was seen on the side on a Saturday when I was away, as a friend of the family, and then he took over and he's now the father.
You referred then to the Liam McGill case, which is quite a famous case in Australia, and went to the High Court, and unfortunately one of the female judges, had been through a similar case herself when she sat in on the decision on Liam McGill. Extraordinary story.
It just emphasises how rampant this is. Only about 9 months ago, it turns out 4 pages in the newspaper, the Archbishop of Canterbury is not who he thought he was. He's illegitimate because of parental deceit. I wrote to the Archbishop, and what did I get back? I wrote him a 2.5-page letter saying, "You're a spiritual leader, do something." And all I got back was from one of his minions, "He's overseas. You know, I'm sure he'll read it when he gets back." And that's what the establishment, all they want to do is to not rock the boat because it's just too much of a distraction, it's too messy. But I think there's a toxic element of our society that needs to be dealt with.
So your approach to the religious authority didn't yield any fruit. You decided to follow the legal path. How did that go?
Well, the two phases. Each one, 2 years. A tough battle, both of them. The first one was terrible because it was a contact case. And basically, it was all the cross between Alice in Wonderland and a Kafka's book, this trial, is we decide what we're going to do. And we find the evidence to suit that. After days of finding out the facts, which were terribly confusing, the judge in the contact case decided really to just ignore them, which was picked out by the fraud case judge Taylor, who said, "It's very odd, isn't it, that they seem to totally ignore any findings from the 3-day case in determining whether what contact there should be." So I lost any idea of no contact order whatsoever. So my ex-wife would not pay the £80,000 back in maintenance, so I took her to the fraud court, and 2 years later I won. 2 years is a long time. 4 years out of my life, and 4 years out of a life with my new family, who I now live with.
And the award of $80,000.
£20,000 of my claim, I actually got £20,000 back of that because that was pure maintenance. £60,000 of the money I paid to her still resides in her offshore bank accounts or investments because of some obscure legal case which says that you can't really claim maintenance back which pertains to the maintenance of a child because that's to do with the child and you've had a benefit from that. Now, I take issue with that because this was a premeditated, carefully planned deceit and fraud, like any kind of fraud would be. It's no different from normal fraud. But because a child is an intervening factor, the woman is allowed to get away with it. And that is exactly what encourages women in vulnerable positions, or in this case, in a very strong position. She was a rich person, had a high income, you know, she didn't need my money. We'll still try and exploit it because the risks of getting sued are low and the penalties of getting sued are low as well. Mm. I mean, the only thing she got left that really hurt her was a rather large legal bill. Very large. If you look at the numbers, she actually did better out of it than I did. Mm. That's with me winning a case after 4 years.
Yes.
So you see the imbalance. Mm. This is how society values men and overprotects deceitful women.
And apart from the financial side, I mean, you went into it so that you would be able to have more time with your child, and how did that finish up?
In the contact case of my ex-wife and the new father, who moved in, basically like someone might have moved into Poland as an occupation and he's still there, moved there throughout. They basically pretended that I would be able to have contact with Timothy, and the judge pretended that that wouldn't happen. We all knew it wouldn't happen, and it didn't happen. Mm. So I've not seen him for 2 years. I send him a card every month. When I last wrote to her, my ex-wife, to suggest I see him for 10 minutes to give him presents or to just see him over summer, she said, he'll see you when he wants to. Mm. And I don't know, in our country we play a lot of football, but they have a song which says, he scores when he wants to. Mm. Yeah. So it's terrible, really. He has got no choice. He's like Rapunzel, basically. And we have to wait until he's 18 to see if he wants to come back. On the Jubilee Bridge, halfway, as in my book, which is pictured as the picture on the book is the Jubilee Bridge, which is the last time that I really had him for a weekend with the family, and we walked over the Jubilee Bridge. It's a kind of a little bridge over the Thames, and he was clinging onto my leg. He didn't want to go back because he knew that he was going to be. The daddy will go back to be switched behind my back. He knew that.
And Timothy is now 11, is that correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, so a few years to wait. What do you see as the future now? Do you have any further action you can take before he turns 18?
No, I'm patient. And what I do is I send my love, my light to him, I transmit that. And sometimes I get an echo from that, so I have a way of doing that, which I'm very fortunate I can do, which means that one day, if he chooses, that we can have that together again.
Well, we sincerely hope that does happen. Jonathan, we've reached the stage of the program where we ask our guests to pick a song. Would you like to pick a song and tell us why you picked it?
Well, it's a song by Michael Jackson that I didn't know this, but this Michael Jackson song that allows you to play Billie Jean is all about, I never knew this, it's all about paternity fraud, because he's dancing away and actually didn't, and this lady's clearly manipulated the production of the charm and stuff. It's, in my book I talk about the tamarind monkeys as well, where one monkey will actually have three or four parents and then like pretend they have sex with one and have sex with another, etc. They have a whole team of them. And it just emphasised that this is not not unusual. It's mainstream. This is happening all the time, but most people don't have the money, they don't have the strength, they don't have the guts to actually fight it in the courts, and the courts are crap, basically. And you know, if it wasn't the case, then we would have fairness. And the children, what damage does this do to these children? Never mind to parents, it's to the children. That's what I want to so emphasise on this interview.
Okay, well, let's listen to Michael Jackson singing Billie Jean.
She was more.
Billie Jean by Michael Jackson. It just remains for me now to give a very special thank you to our guest today, Jonathan Grinden, who is the author of The Lion, The Switch and The Cuckoo, Adultery in a Test Tube. Jonathan, thank you very much for being on the program.
You're welcome. Bye-bye for now.
And don't forget, we'd love to hear from any of our listeners. You can go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, and send us an email and we'll be in touch. Or if you'd like to listen to this show again or any of our shows, go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, or you can follow us on Facebook or Twitter. And we'll be back next week with another show on Dads on the Air.